Excellent. So hopefully everyone can hear. If you cannot hear what's being said, then you should come a little bit closer. So sometimes people are hard of hearing, and if you are hard of hearing, that is so lucky. It means you don't have to listen to the same old stories again. But if you are interested, always come a little bit closer. Now, first of all, the meditation which we're doing over here, sometimes people keep asking, well, what do they teach you in meditation over in Jhana Grove? And what type of meditation does Ajahn Brahm teach? And sometimes that those questions just tell me that there's been so much, and this is the first time some of you will hear this word, so much gomayang about the types of meditation. Gomayang, for those of you who haven't heard me teach before, go is a word for a bull, a male big cow. And mayang is what comes, the solid stuff which comes out of the backside of the cow. I think some of you have got it already. But because I'm a monk, you know, some words you're not really supposed to say, like bullshit. So I only say it once, and now it becomes the word gomayang. And sometimes it means the same thing, but that's Pali. So when I say gomayang, you know what I mean. So people have a lot of gomayang about what meditation is. And so how do you know if you're going on the correct path or not? Is this really leading into good meditation or is it not? What's happening? And the gold standard is what the Buddha said to the first nun, Mahaprajapati, and also to Upali, said, if it's leading in the right direction, leading to more peace, more happiness, more stillness, more clarity, leading to things disappearing, renouncing, enlightenment, if it's going in the right direction, then you can tell that, yes, this is the correct type of meditation. Because at first, it's so hard to know, you know, what to do, what not to do. You may have a charismatic monk or charismatic nuns or charismatic presidents. Just because that many people get enamored of them does not mean that what they're saying is the truth. And it's just for us. We always like to hear what we want to hear. But instead, we have to find out, is this leading in the right direction or not? So to find out if it's leading in the right direction, we have these little like standards. Is it, are you getting more peaceful, more relaxed, more healthy, you know, less cranky, less upset? If you are, it must be leading in the right direction. So there's a simile, which I usually do later on in the retreat, but it just comes up right now, that how to deal with doubt, you know, in the practice. Am I doing it the right way? Or whatever. And that little simile was when I was a young man. I was a Buddhist at 16. I started calling myself a Buddhist just through reading books. Didn't really know where to go, what to do, how to deepen that practice. But at least when I had a vacation at university, I'd usually get a job, get a little bit of money, and then hardly spend it because I needed it for so many things. And for my holidays, I used to sort of basically go up into the very north of Scotland and just in the mountains, a little tent, and just stay for weeks up there, just in solitude. I loved solitude, even as a young man. And there was this one occasion, it was northwest of Scotland, in the far north, was beautiful during the summertime, but you go down there this time of the year and it's just impossible to live. It's so bleak, you hardly see the sun come up because it's really far north. And it's, you know, so freezing cold. But during the summertime, it's a totally different country. It's like paradise up there. So, beautiful day, I would stop at a youth hostel for the night just to get a shower and just to get my supplies, you know, all filled up before you went up into the mountains in solitude again. And the warden of the youth hostel, who was a local fellow, said, well, I'm going to go have a walk up this mountain today. Do you want to come with me? And I said, yeah, sure. So it was a beautiful day. It was not a steep mountain. It was just a nice long walk. And up the top of this mountain, and when we got to the top, had a sit down, enjoy the incredible view. Beautiful, cloudless, sunny summer's day in the north of Scotland. And I said, there's another mountain over there. Let's go up to the second mountain. At which point, the warden of the hostel said, nah, one mountain's enough for me today. I'm going back. See you this evening. And it was not a really good idea. I actually would blame that warden later on, because you should never go in wilderness areas by yourself. Because what happens if any accident happens? You've got no one to call, you're up there for days, and you die. So, no mobile phones obviously in those days, no GPS, nothing. So, it didn't seem dangerous to me, beautiful day. So I was walking up to the second mountain, another hour or two, and in that time, I just could not believe how fast the weather changed. Because this cloud bank came over from the Atlantic Ocean, and it sort of went right over the mountain I was almost at the top of, and then descended quickly. So fast that I was totally enveloped in this mist, which was so thick that I could put out my hand. I could hardly see my hand at the end of my arm. It was really dense mist. And at first, I was not worried at all, because I think all you need to do is turn around and go back the way you came. No problem. And you know, that was where the first time I discovered that human beings do not have a sense of direction. Animals do. I don't know how dogs and cats find their way home, but you know, there was this one cat some years ago. This is not the Kit Kat, this is George. This cat, he was appeared at Bodhinyana Monastery just one day, just the start of the range retreat. And it was a really beautiful, really furry cat, just very domesticated. So, you know, we didn't know where it came from. So, you know, it was range retreat, we weren't doing much traveling at all. So it got quickly adopted. Such a friendly cat, would sit on anybody's lap and just sort of stroke it, and it would purr. And just for emotionally deprived monks, it was a wonderful thing to have. We're not emotionally deprived, but I think you can understand. But then, okay, this cat's not going anywhere, so we decided we'd have to go and take it to the vet to get checked out. And in Western Australia, I think all whole of Australia, if you have like a cat, you have to have it chipped, so we have a record who it is. And that's when we took it to the local vet. He said, it's already got a chip in it. And so we found its owner, who lived in South Perth. And so we contacted the owner. The owner said, that's George. We wonder where George went to. We were looking for it. And he said, it's just been at our monastery. How the heck did it get all the way from South Perth to here? Just came in and wouldn't go anywhere. And so it just came, you know, for range retreat. That's what I reckon. And at the end of the retreat period, it's time to go home, so I just went back. So even though cats know a nice place to come for a little bit of peace and quiet. But anyway, it's amazing how animals just know their way around, but human beings don't. So the reason I was confident, really it was quite clear that I didn't know which way I was going, was that I was walking, just, you know, trying to find out my directions. One more step, literally, and I would have fallen over this very big cliff. And I saw the ground was just disappeared in front of me. And I checked on the maps afterwards. There's only one place on that mountain where there was a cliff that steep. and that, you know, far down. And it was in 180 degree opposite direction I thought I was going in. So it was scary. People have had tales. You know, if you don't understand the way that... Anyone here from Scotland or Scottish ancestry? Okay, we know the Scots and the English. Sometimes the Scots don't like the English all that much, and sometimes they tell these stories, oh yeah, I remember these Englishmen lost in the mountains for weeks. And I didn't know if they were just teasing me or exaggerating, whatever. But it was true, you could see just how sometimes people get lost in that mist and you can be in there for days. You know, with no way of getting out. And so I realized I was in trouble. So what you do, instead of panicking, just you stop a little while and use a bit of common sense. The solution was quite easy. And what it was I knew from my science, I was studying theoretical physics at the time. So it's part of theoretical physics is to know that water always flows downhill. Simple stuff. So I found some water, a little creek. There's heaps of creeks up there. And so I found a little creek and just followed it. Whichever way it went, I was going to follow that no matter what. And followed it because it was always going down, down, down. Eventually it would get low enough until it got under the cloud, which is what it did. So I followed that creek round and round and round. You know, other creeks came into it, got a little bit bigger, went this way, that way. But I was always going down. And so when I went down, 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 soon you went underneath the cloud so you could see where you were. You can actually see now. Then that's where I managed to escape. You know, from the mist, which was up there for, actually was up there for days. And that was a simile which I used for meditation, for truth, for meaning in your life. Doubt is like being in the mist. You may think you've got direction, you know what you're doing, you can waste so much time following so many different ways. Find something which goes in a direction you know. What makes you more peaceful? What makes you more clear? More happy? Less angry? Less demanding? Easily satisfied? More content? Even more healthy? You can feel that. So those are directions which you can know. Follow those. And that makes you confident you're going in the correct direction, in meditation or in life. So, if you should be able to notice that, but if you don't, the people you stay with can. There are stories about what happens next. Sometimes some of you have such a difficult time just getting to this place. You know, some of you got busy lives, you've got to get your annual leave, you've got to argue with your family that, you know, you have to sort of come on this retreat. There's so many other demands on your time, things you're supposed to do. So it's hard. So some years ago, a lady from Sydney, she's told me she had to beg from her boss to get, you know, 1 week off, you know, the 2 weekends and the 5 days in between. It's so busy, I need you, an important part of this organization. She begged and groveled, that's what she said. But when she went back to her boss over in Sydney, she told me, she sent this email and said, the boss took one look at her on a Monday morning after the retreat had finished and said, what drugs have they been giving you in Jhana Grove? I don't care if they're illegal or not, but just make sure you bring me back some next time. Because she looked so happy. And a happiness and a relaxation, which, you know, the boss noticed and thought it was just some illegal substances, not meditation. Or the times when you go back and you're child says, oh mummy, you're such a lovely mummy when you've been to meditation. Or, to keep it gender neutral, this guy used to come here years and years ago. Here what he wanted to go was a weekend retreat. No, you can't go on a weekend retreat. It's such a busy time. You've got to take the kids to sport. You've got to do the shopping, fix up the shelves. There's so much stuff to do. No, you can't go. Okay, darling. And every time a weekend retreat, he told me this story. He kept asking, no, you can't go. And one day the wife was so frustrated with him. Okay, you go off on your stupid retreat and just, you know, while I do all the work. He took that as a yes. So off he went. But the result was amazing. When he came back, he was such a lovely husband to live with. Much more sensitive and sort of, you know, kind. She noticed it so much, he told me, that the next time there was a weekend retreat, he never even needed to ask. She gave him the money and sent him off. Go on. Because she saw the results. There was more peace, more compassion, more just softness. So sometimes coming on a retreat is not just for you. Don't think, oh, this is selfish, just meditating, you're looking after yourself. No. This is for the benefit of all the people who have to put up with you. You're a much nicer person after this. So it's going in the correct direction. More peace, more happiness, more gentle. But in the meantime, obviously, you know, you're not with your family at the moment, most of you. So, but what you do know, that you can actually start feeling it yourself. It's called mindfulness, awareness. How do you feel? Feel sort of energized, feel really good. How's your resilience? You know, when you step on something and, oh, and sometimes, oh, these monks, we're going to sue these monks, we're not supposed to have it this way, that way. You find your resilience increases, so things don't bother you anymore. Somebody bangs the door, oh, the bang has gone a long time ago. You don't sort of keep thinking about it all day and all night. Your resilience is things happening which knows this meditation is going in the correct direction. That's really important because sometimes people think meditation, right, this is it. No more teddy bears. No more cushions. This is the real stuff, okay? So, Ajahn Brahma is going to go out there and get his Zen stick. Anybody who doesn't laugh at my jokes... Anybody is 1 second late. Now, people think, oh, yeah, that's the real stuff. Yeah, that's, you know, enlightenment really fast. Yeah, that's the really not this stupid namby-pamby, cream puff, teddy bear meditations. What am I going to... Because I don't know about you, but, you know, we started long ago with teddy bears, only one. And now look at them, they're multiplied. I don't know what they've been doing. They can't be keeping any precepts. They multiply every time. Do you notice that? Just how many more teddy bears? I don't know where they come from. Anyway. But the reason we have these and the reason we have this retreat, because it works. There's something here you can actually feel. You get more peaceful and more deep in the meditation. You find it is going in the correct direction. Afterwards, you look back in things like suttas, where the Buddha, and he said, oh yeah, that's what the Buddha said. Yeah, there you can see it. But sometimes people believe no pain, no gain. If you try that, one of my friends long time ago, he was being really tough on himself, just only eating just a small amount of food. He would not lay down to sleep. He'd always sleep sitting up. And he was just getting himself so tight that he was staying in this monastery and Ajahn Chah came to visit. And during Ajahn Chah's talk, because he hadn't slept, because physical pain, he was just trying to conquer the pain through his mind. He had an epileptic fit. The only time in his life he's had a seizure right in front of Ajahn Chah, which was fortunate because Ajahn Chah could see him. And yes, he fell off the bench and cracked his head open. It was actually quite dramatic, but it was, in a sense, quite useful because Ajahn Chah realized, you Westerners, you go too far. you force yourself too much. He said, that is not the middle way. And because he went that far and people saw him, especially the teacher, he realized, no, come on, just relax a bit more. You can feel whether it's the right amount, just with your body. So that brings me on to, you feel what is the correct type of meditation. How do we mean that? How do you practice that? The first part of your meditation, even if anyone looks in Anapanasati, which is part of Satipatthana, you start off arousing, sitting in a comfortable place, arousing mindfulness in your body. So you're sitting here, comfortable, on a chair. I have to mention the chairs. We have chairs on purpose, and that we went around looking for the most comfortable meditation chair, not ones, you know, which is like armchairs or lazy boys, but, you know, ones with the right height, not too high, not too low. Obviously, you can't have one size fits all, so if it's too high for you, you put a cushion under your feet. If it's too low for you, you put a cushion underneath your bum, which means that, you know, you can just get the right height for you. You can lean back, you can lean forward. You might see a few of them have armrests. If you tend to lean over to the left or the right, that's what those armrests are for, to stop you falling off. You can, and then we went to a lot of trouble looking for comfortable meditation chairs, and that's the best we could come up with. Or you can use the mats if you want to sit on the floor, but don't think that, no, I'm tough. I am going to sit on the floor. Get rid of the cushions, come on. We're just gonna. Some people really get into that stuff, and you know, that doesn't work at all. So you find the best position for you, just whether it's a chair or whatever. Next, in meditation, we close our eyes, because with your eyes closed, you can be much more aware of your body. It's one sense is turned off. So basically you get more space in your brain to deal with physical feelings. We're not trying to overcome them. We're not just trying to get to know them. We're trying to actually to ease them. So if you're sitting there and you find that your knees are aching, you don't just sit there and just say, oh, it's aching, it's aching, it's aching. Come on, I'm going to defeat you. We have kindness. Good old traditional Buddhist compassion. That's one of the things which really attracted me as a young man to Buddhism, this beautiful compassion. And then I went to some of these retreats, where's the compassion gone? Sleepy, whack. That's not compassionate. Or, get up, 4 o'clock in the morning, no matter what. But I'm sick. Doesn't matter. Get up. Where's the compassion? And I realized that that's not what meditation is. Just force. It's using the kindness. So what do I mean there? You start at the very beginning, sitting down, closing your eyes, and just feeling your body with your mind. How is it? How are you, body? And you become aware of physical feelings. Sometimes the physical feeling which you become most aware of, most easily, is the one which is creating the most discomfort. You may have like a hay fever and have an itchy nose. You may have a sore stomach. Maybe overcoming an operation and still have the wound, you can feel it in there. You have a physical discomfort. So, you're aware of it. And you add this wonderful thing we call kindness. What is kindness? It's exactly the same as letting go. the kindness opening the door of your heart to this moment or to this feeling. The unconditional, undemanding, just goodwill to something. Just like a mother would love her only child, even her only child drives you crazy, is a little monster, but it's my monster and she's okay. And it's wonderful just to see that sort of that unconditional love. And that's what we have to the feelings in our body. Now, if you are aware of a feeling in the body and you're really aware of it, the awareness allows you to get what I keep calling feedback. You see it change. Feelings, sensations in the body never stay exactly the same. They get worse, they get better. You can see them moving. Now, from the feedback which mindfulness gives you, you learn what makes it worse. You learn what relieves the discomfort or the pain. You learn, you're watching all the time with your mindfulness. And then once you realize what makes that pain worse, you stop doing that. It's crazy. What relaxes it? Yeah, now keep on doing that. What relaxes the body, eases the pain, gets rid of the discomfort, and everything starts to settle down and become really relaxed and peaceful, that is the meaning of kindness. That is what letting go is. There's so many times people say, yeah, I know we're supposed to let go. Yeah, we're supposed to be kind, but how? It's a strange thing to realize that people, yeah, we should be compassionate. Has anyone ever taught you how to be compassionate? Yeah, we know we should let go, but how do we do it? Ajahn Brahm, help. Teach me how to let go. This is where you start learning. On your own body. You feel it. What makes it worse? Control, fear, wanting to get rid of stuff. What makes it better? It's letting it be, letting go, kindness. You can feel it, relax. And it's wonderful to actually to be able to do that, to see that. And the reason we start with that, because you have a huge incentive to deal with your own body. Because you know that many people who come to these retreats, they're getting a bit on in life. Come on, be honest. We're getting past middle age, sometimes a long way past our middle age. And those of you who say, not me, well, I am pretty much getting close. But your body is starting to wear out. It's not as supple and as thin and do all those things you used to do when you were young. It's starting to wear out. So you realize there's a lot of problems in front of you if you don't know how to look after this body. Cancers, heart disease, dementia. What was it, the other thing I was going to say? Oh, yeah, dementia. Ah, and of course, dementia. But all those things which we face, they're pretty scary. So what are you going to do? You know, sometimes people, we feel that just we're victims, we can't do anything. And it's just as if all of our responsibility is taken away from us. And no, you can do heaps of stuff. Even like anxiety disorders, depressions. Yeah, it comes in our life, but what are you doing about it? And you can do something. You can feel, what does depression feel like in your body? Don't try and get rid of it, but just feel it. The tiredness, the yuckiness. Feel it. Then, you notice it changes. Sometimes it gets better, sometimes it gets worse. Why? And you'll find that what makes things get better, the following the stream going downhill, is this beautiful letting things be. Kindness, compassion. So the classic story, anxiety disorder. It's a lady over in She's over here in Perth now. She was in Adelaide University at the time, dentist student. She had huge anxiety disorder, so bad that she was in bed just about all the time. And do you need something, gum? Oh no, just sitting on the back. Huge anxiety disorder, in bed bound. And, you know, she was a university student in Australia, so had a free medical care, psychologist. There was actually professors teaching psychology and psychiatry, and they couldn't help her. So, when no one else can help you, when you're really in the deep poo, who do you call? Supermunk. That was only because their uncle was a close supporter of ours. I said, oh, you're going to call Dr. Brown. So she called me up, said what was happening to her. Really strong anxiety disorder. So, how does a good monk who knows how this body and mind works deal with this? He said, well, next, when you have an anxiety disorder, an attack, I asked her, where do you feel it on your body? Because all emotions have a corresponding feeling somewhere in your body. So, she said, well, it's in my chest somewhere. And I knew she was like science, dentistry. So, exactly where? Well, it's in my chest somewhere. I said, not good enough. I want coordinates. Millimeters up from your navel, to the left, to the right. So I want you to, and exactly, is it just one spot, or is it a circle, a square, is it an oval, diameters? I want the whole works. And give me a call when you can give me the answer. So number one, is this a trick, a skillful means? She, number one, had something to do, instead of just letting other people tell her what to do. And secondly, she was becoming aware, mindful of the feeling in her body. She had to be really aware because, you know, she was going to have to tell me exactly what shape it was. And so a few days later she called, she said, I've been following your instructions. And she said something like so many centimeters above her navel, a little bit to the left, you know, circular, maybe about 12 centimeters in diameter or whatever. I said, great. Now, describe how it feels, what it feels like. It's just, it's tense. Not good enough. I want a thorough sort of, no, I don't know, 200 word description in 3 days. Whatever. So she did that. And she gave me this, because she had to investigate it. She was really getting to know it. And so she gave me this long description of what it felt like. I said, great. I was actually really impressed, you know. Because, you know, you have an ache or pain somewhere, and the doctor says, what does it feel like? Well, it hurts. Yeah, I know that, but exactly how? Well, it's just painful. Thank you so much. So I really feel for doctors who have to, these really symptoms, which could mean anything. And they've got to somehow deduce, you know, what the patient is experiencing. But she, because nothing else to do all day, she was there just, and when anxiety attack comes, she really got to know it. Next thing. Said, now, when are you mindful now? Now, when you're mindful, what makes it worse and what makes it better? And I obviously knew what makes it better. Said, next time you have an anxiety attack like that, in the area where it is, in your body, take your hand and massage it. Massage it with real lots of softness and even sensuality. Just really care for it. Really look after it. And I said, because she told me she had a live-in boyfriend, and one of these boys, if you ever get a boy like that, just, you know, just grab him as soon as you possibly can, because he was just washing for her, looking after her, doing everything for her. And said, if you can't do it, get Lloyd to do it for you. And he didn't mind doing that at all. Very, very self-sacrificing. Rubbing his girlfriend's belly. But anyway, then gave me a call in 3 days. And so that was the beautiful time when 3 days later she gave me a call. Said, did you follow instructions? Yeah. And said, did you massage the area? He said, yeah. So what happened to the feeling, the tightness, the tension, the pain, the burning in your in your chest when you had anxiety. Oh, that's just because I massaged it, it disappeared. So the body actually relaxed. And then, the wonderful moment, what happened to the anxiety? You know, they call it eureka moments, the light bulb moments, those wonderful times in your life, you get it. And she paused. And there's a wonderful pause, only maybe 20 seconds or something. She said the anxiety went as well. Great. Don't need to call me anymore. She got it. And a couple of weeks later, she was out a bit. Back to her classes. She graduated with first class honours in dentistry. And it was about a year or two later, I got my invitation to do the marriage blessing for her and Lloyd in the Sunken Gardens at UWA. And cured. Now, that was an example of the power of the mindfulness together with the letting go or the kindness. Words mean the same. Because what happens is, you realize the mindfulness, you're aware of the body. You're aware of the emotional effect of life on your body, and you learn how to relax it. Really relax it, fully relax it, and you can feel it. It disappears. No anxiety. No tumor. No, the irritable bowel syndrome, whatever else people have. No headaches. No cold, whatever else you have. You feel it, you relax it, the kindness works. It's moving in the right direction. And because this is very powerful, it works so well, that is where you have an incentive. And unfortunately, you have to say this, a reward for being mindful and being kind. Letting go. You learn what letting go is. So if you're sleeping at night, if you can't sleep well at night, what do you do? Come on, you've got to go to bed. You've got to go to sleep. You've got to go to sleep. And of course, you stay up all night worrying about so much stuff. You've already got enough to worry about. Now you're worrying about not going to sleep. Crazy people. So instead, you just lay down. Get yourself nice and comfortable. Be aware. Is there any tension anywhere in your body? Any tightness somewhere? And if there is, just give this beautiful kindness. Even if, you've got tightness in your legs, just start stroking them with kindness to relax. And you can feel you're mindful, not just of your fears of not going to sleep or not being able to wake up in the morning. You become aware of those fears and just you relax everything. When it's kindness, when it's letting go, you relax. So this is something which is great for your physical health. It's part of the meditation. So many people these days, they teach meditation for health purposes. Fine, because you're learning something really important. To be aware and to be kind. Now afterwards, once you learn what kindness is, what letting go is, sometimes I say letting go, sometimes I call letting be. What's the difference between letting go and letting be? It's just whether you look at it from the left or from the right. Letting go is letting go of craving, wanting, getting rid of things, letting go of doing stuff. And letting be is just what happens when you don't do anything. You just let it be. Otherwise known as compassion. The door of my heart is open to this moment. I let it be, no matter what it is, unconditional mindfulness. So then you learn to be with something, and you find on your body, you can feel it. You get quick results, results which you can know, which you feel, which means that, yeah, now I know I'm learning letting go. I'm learning kindness, and it's that which relaxes the body. Now, we turn that onto our emotional world. It's the same process, but just on different objects. all of the anxiety, the fears, for example, fear of the future, what's going to happen to you? Ooh, another 8 days, can I stand this? Nothing to eat in the evening? Can I stand not watching my mobile phone? It's amazing just how much fear people have. And how do we let go of those fears? Come on, been a monk for so many years. Come on, you can just let go, let go, let go. And it gets worse. Oh, the past. All the traumas that you've been through in your life. All the difficulties. All the abuse which I suffered from Ajahn Chah. All those long talks, those frog on rice meals. People actually ask him, so you've got, you know, Westerners over here, can we get some Western food? He said, nope. What we eat, they eat. Thank you very much. It's abuse. Having to get up really early in the morning. I mean, what else do we have to do? Which we could do. Oh yeah, working really hard. 10, 11 hours a day. We should have formed a union. They didn't have unions those days in China anyway, but we should have got on strike. I often thought about going on strike, just sitting down, and people think, no, you're not striking, you're just meditating again. I don't know, how can we go on strike? Anyway, so we could do anything, but you can think of all the stuff. And actually, he wasn't really abused. Ajahn Chah was a really great teacher. Great, lots of gratitude for him. But all that stuff, it's so easy to look in the past. So, you know, just got to let it go. You know, there's no way that you can just change the past. There's no way that you can think, oh, if I did it different, this would have happened. So you have to let it go. But how do you let go of the past? Go on, let go. No, let go, let go, let go. It doesn't go. I want to let go of the past, but I'm sitting here and I keep thinking about it, and it just makes me upset, and it's not such a bad person. I've heard that story from Ajahn Brahm. Somebody, I've heard it once again. I'm going to go to his room and I'm going to get sort of something to get this and hit him on the head. Oh, no, he's my teacher. I can't do things like that. But how do you let things go? Well, you learn this on your body. You have an ache and pain, get out of here, you don't belong. I don't want you in here, I'm meditating, I shouldn't be feeling like this. You know, I've been waiting for this retreat for such a long time and I've got this ache, I've got this cold, I've got this flu. Why does it happen now? I can't have a flu when I'm supposed to be at work and take a day off. You only have this chance to have a retreat, you know, maybe, I don't know, so rare. It's unfair. So instead of arguing with life, by arguing with your body, you feel that just makes it more tense. It just do like that girl did who had the anxiety disorder. You get to know it and you relax and relax and relax. You relax your past. You don't try and get rid of it. You soften your past with kindness. Very beautiful way of doing it. Kindness, they're not getting rid of stuff. Oh, I don't know why you did that. Probably good for me. Didn't think so at the time, but I did learn a lot. And my ex-partner, yeah, you know, it was really painful, but I did learn a lot. Have you? Oh, you learn from these things. It's unfair. Unfair? That's what I told that on last Wednesday night. Or somewhere, last Friday, somewhere. About up the road, Karnat Prison Farm, there was, when I used to go and teach meditation over there, and one of the old prisoners came up to me once and said, can I just have a few words with you? Yeah, sure, what is it? And the old prisoner said, I've been put in prison for a crime I didn't commit. He said, I know many people will say that to you, but look, I really respect you, Ajahn Brahm. I am not lying to you. I wouldn't lie to you. I didn't do that robbery. I was set up. And you know, every now and again you find out people who, you know, in jail for crimes they didn't do. And he said, that was me, I didn't do that crime. And I've been put in jail for this. And of course, you know, I'm compassionate and You know, you can't just sit there and just let sort of miscarriages of justice happen. So I started thinking, that's terrible, who can I contact? And then he interrupted my thoughts with this cheeky smile. He was such a scallywag, this man. And he said, it's true, I'm not lying to you, I never did that robbery for which I've been put in jail. But, he said, there were so many other robberies I did where I wasn't caught. So I guess this is fair. He was teaching me the law of karma. He really got me on that one. You know, how many times do you think it's not fair? You know, why did that happen? I didn't do anything. Yeah, but how many times you've got away with stuff which you shouldn't be caught for? But anyway, so it all balances out in the end, somewhere along the line. So even if, you know, it's a bit of a stretch to think that, but why not? Why not? It's just a balancing out. It's a way of being kind to your past. Giving yourself the benefit of the doubt, giving other people the benefit of the doubt, being kind. When you look at the past, you don't look at the past like a prosecutor in a trial, trying to find out every possible angle to incriminate, you know, the defendant, if you're a prosecutor. Just not believing anything they say, just trying to sort of justify your anger. But instead, when you look at the past, you should be like a defense attorney. Extenuating circumstances, different ways of perceiving what happened, anything to be kind. And if you can do that, it's called softening the past, being compassionate towards the past. You try it. And the mindfulness will feel the past gets really soft. Instead of this really hard, spiky, painful thing you're carrying. It's all nice and soft, and then it's easy to let it go. Why do you want to let it go? Because it's in your interest to let it go. It's in other people's interest to let it go. Don't be thinking, oh, we need justice. What they did to me and they're getting away. No one gets away with anything. Especially if you're a Buddhist or a Hindu and you have some understanding of the law of karma. There's no need to seek revenge because karma will get the bastard anyway. Please excuse me for using that language, but people remember that. No need to seek revenge. Because karma will get them anyway. So it means you can let karma do that job. So you can just let it go. Relax. So you feel this is using the compassion even on the past. So here we are, the present moment. Kind to the future, kind to the past. So it just vanishes. You know the next thing you have to be kind to? The present moment. Be here now. How? Yeah, I know you're supposed to do that, but how? The power of now. Yeah, but how? And so, good old compassion again. Be kind to this present moment. Oh, present moment, you're not the best. I'm tired. Yes, I want this talk to end. I want to just go and lay down. I want something to eat. I want a cup of tea. I want to go to the toilet. I want to do something or other. I just don't want to be here. Anywhere but here. So, and sometimes you look at this place, look, it doesn't get better than this. You've got no one on your back telling you what to do. No husband, no wife, no kids screaming at you. Just no boss at work, no traffic jam to worry about, and just, wow, you know, you're just so free here. That it really sucks then when you think, oh, if I can't be happy here, I just can't be happy anywhere, I'm just hopeless, a real mess. So you are kind to this moment. Ah, oh, it's not the best, but it's good enough. Ah, oh, yeah, I'm tired, but that's just par for the course. Be kind to my body. Just like if you have a kid, and the kid can't go to sleep at night, ah, oh, there you go, kid. Mummy is here. Ajahn Brahm is here. It's all right. No need to do anything. She's fine. And you do that. It's actually really quite nice. You should try this. And you're being kind to yourself. When you're kind to yourself, kind to this moment, you find it's easy to stay here. You know, you find out the only reason why people go off into the past and future and fantasize and try and escape because they don't have enough kindness to where they already are. When you're kind to something, everything gets really soft and peaceful and beautiful. So be kind to this moment. I often say, if you're too hot, keep a cool head. If you're too cold, a warm heart. If be kind. Kind to this body, kind to the temperature, kind to all the people here. And if somebody is making all this noise, oh, just be kind to them. Look, this story, lovely little inspiring story. One of those retreats I was giving in Sydney years ago. First day, question time. I don't know how many times I had the same question. Can you please tell people, Ajahn Brahm, can you please tell people to breathe quietly? I mean, what a stupid question that was. But the reason was there was this one guy sitting there. He was really making a loud noise when he was meditating. And many people really getting disturbed. And that's what I should have made it. Actually, I'm glad I didn't make the announcement at first because there was a lot of really beautiful story. I said, that fellow who just checked here with me when he first came to the retreat has this huge tumour in his sinuses. Doctors have given up all hope for him. And he's come to this retreat, you know, what we call the last throw of the dice. Who knows, maybe meditation might help, but he's dying. You know, when I mentioned that, there was no more complaints at all about this fellow. When they heard him breathing in sort of very noisily, they gave him so much compassion and kindness. You know, the fellow was dying. His last hope. And that kindness which they gave him made their meditations much better as well. It wasn't the noise which was disturbing them. They were disturbing the noise, as Ajahn Chah used to say. And so they just left him alone, this beautiful kindness. And the nice part of that story was at the very end of the retreat, and he was getting nowhere, still just breathing loudly, but I'll mention this again, I'm sure, the last meditation. I don't know why it is the last meditation. Always happens the last meditation. And sometimes I was thinking actually we should stop this meditation on Sunday to make it the last meditation this Sunday and then do it again on Monday. An extra day, then an extra day. Could waste so much time. But the other last meditation, oh, they give up basically. Oh, it's not working. I can't do it. Oh, okay, just kill time. So anyway, this gentleman, last meditation. Because he came running to me, because I was getting in the car, going to go to the airport to come back to Perth. And he said, Ajahn Brahm, Ajahn Brahm, Ajahn Brahm. Yeah, what happened? He said, I heard a pop. I remember this popping sound. And he could breathe through his nose. No, the air could actually go in. This is not imagination, you know, it's actually, could feel it. But it's only for 1 minute, and then the tumor closed up again. But I mean, that was, for him, that was an amazing. The tumour had shrunk. Didn't need to have a scan to do this, could actually feel it. The air could go in and out properly. But it closed up again. But that gave him encouragement. And what happened next, about 6 months, a year later, giving a talk somewhere else in Sydney, and this gentleman came up, do you remember me? Do not do that to me. I don't want to offend you, but I can't break my precepts. I don't know, who the hell are you? But I saw you. I was in Sri Lanka at BMICH, 10,000 people. I saw you there. Yeah, thank you. But anyway, he said, I was that guy. And I was really surprised. He's still alive. He said, yeah, tumor's totally gone. And he just carried on from where I left him, and full remission. He says, I'm now, however many more years I've got left, I'm going around teaching this meditation to others. And that was just, can you imagine just how that feels? You know, the job satisfaction. You know, when somebody takes it on board, they're kind, and they actually feel things like tumours just shrinking. Tumour in the nose, you can notice that because, you know, you could breathe again. And he carried on, it worked. Beautiful stuff. Same thing happens with everything else in your life. There's meditation. Be kind to this moment. Yeah, there's noises around. What a wonderful story that was. Everyone really enjoyed that. They were part of it by not complaining, not kicking them out of the retreat. So, be kind to other people in your room. If they have banging the doors or getting up early or making difficulty, oh, poor things. Give them kindness. And then after a while, you're kind to this moment, kind to others, kind to your body. The results are huge. That's what I mean by following the stream downhill. You can feel the results. You don't need to have any theories about it. You know them, you're aware. Mindfulness gives you the feedback, it's happening. And that means you're going in the correct direction. Many more little bits of instructions to do, but once you get in that direction, ooh, having a great time. Kind to your body, kind to one another, kind to this moment. So, I saw just a minute ago just somebody yawning. So if you are tired, what should you do? Fight it! Come on, now I'm going to beat my tiredness. I am stronger than this. What do you do if you're tired? You take a rest. Where's the best place to take a rest? Yes. We spent a lot of money making nice beds for you. So don't just look at them. Use. We call that meditating flat out. So if you need to take a break, take a break. And feel it in your body. Does the body get better? Do you feel more relaxed, more tense? What's the result? If you feel really dozy because you really, you know, you've already slept way too much anyway, you don't really need any more sleep, you will notice that in your own body. It's just too much. So feel it and get to know just how to relax the body and how to be happy in this moment. And after a while, you don't really need to have a sleep. You just go and get a cup of tea, cup of coffee, glass of water, juice, whatever it is, and just sit out in front of the kitchen or the dining area. It's a beautiful little place there. Nice trees. You don't need to do anything, say anything. Just sit there and just, I always say, just watch the trees grow. It's amazing. This place has been, I don't know how many years now, almost 10 years, I think. How many years now, Bianca, is this place? 9 years, 8 years, something around that. Anyway. But anyway, those trees have grown. They do grow. But you've got to be very aware and very still. If you look away, that's when they grow. In other words, an excuse for just sitting there doing nothing. And just relax, chill out, and enjoy the beautiful scenery. It's not too hot today, not too cold. Beautiful time of the year. So enjoy. There we go. So that's the talk. More to come later on. Sadhu. 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 And if anyone wants to know why we've got these teddy bears over here, they're to cuddle. So you do it, so can I have a teddy bear if anyone wants to? Here we go. So what you do, you put them down here when you meditate, and you meditate with a teddy bear. You will find it enhances your meditation enormously. Something nice and soft and cuddly. Ooh. It teaches you some kindness so you can be kind to yourself as well. So you're sitting here just being kind, being aware, and you find you relax. It's easy to be in the moment. Safe, kind, very, very soft. So that's why we have lots of teddy bears here for everybody. He's got they're not the female ones on that side, and the male ones, because you've got that one over there. Could get the multicoloured one. I don't know where that one came from. That's usually one of the most favourite ones. I don't know. This is called the punk bear. Look at this cello. Anyway, the first come, first serve. Please adopt a bear. Very good. Okay, so have a nice time this morning. See you later on.